Okay. I need to be honest about something before I give the satsang, and that is that I'm only giving the satsang because I'm taking Vahinia's place, because she had volunteered to sit in this chair and give the satsang, but in Spanish. So I said that was okay, but I thought about it, and I realized that Barry wants some additional time off from having to do translation work. So I decided I would give it so I could give it in English. Okay, and I want to... and actually, this is a first. I don't think I've ever given a talk in all the years in a sweatshirt, but the fashion police and my fashion advisor have dictated that I do that. So I will give my first satsang in a Cosmos Tree sweatshirt. Okay, and... Okay, got everyone's attention on that one. Good. Okay. I want to talk about what's under the prevalent emotion on the planet. We talked about emotion and what it was originally when we really were in our pure state, as it were, as souls. It was emotion. It was the motion or the energy of God. And it has since been polluted or distorted by what we call emotions now, hurt, pain, anger, that sort of stuff. And that is our emotional pattern now. And that's what fills our causal body, our emotional body that we wear. Okay? And we've really sort of researched mankind, all of our existences, and we've come to the conclusion that the emotion that we do share that has the most prevalence in that area is one of anger, okay? That we're furious that we've been kicked out of the Garden of Eden. We're furious that God doesn't love us, care about us, okay? And we're furious that we have no worth, okay? And if you take a look at our myths, that's exactly what's being said. Okay, kicked out of the garden. Okay, take a look at how we treat each other. It's with a total sense of disdain, non-comprehension, non-humanness in terms of you are the enemy. If we understood that we were spirit and that it was the same spirit in you as in the next person, regardless of what they're wearing. See, some people wear a body that has this color skin, that color skin. Some people wear a body that has a penis. Some people wear a body that doesn't have a penis. Some people wear all different kinds of clothing called a body, but we're all wearing the same thing. We're all in this form. Okay, and if we could understand that we're humans, hey, we're in business. And we chant you at the beginning for the simple reason that you is the first manifestation of God. Okay? The vibratory frequency issues forth from God into the manifested worlds. Okay? It's the spiritual worlds and the invisible worlds, as it were, but it's the first manifestation of Him. Okay? And that tells us who and what we are. That we're humans, we're of God, of the sound current, or the Word. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. That's our creation. We were created by God in His image. Okay? Does that mean that He looks like us? No. Does that mean that He's from the same country as us? No. Does that mean He eats the same food as us? Well, if you're talking about the spiritual food, in a sense, yeah, okay, but no, He doesn't eat the food that we eat or anything else like that. But the image is the soul, the sound, the Word, the Holy Spirit. And that's what God's made out of, and that's what we're made out of. And that's you. Okay, and that's what it is to be a human. See? And there's this great part in us that doesn't think that we're worthy of God. See? Because we've forgotten that what our worth is. Now, if you take a look, too, at what people do with their lives and what they value and what they chase, there are mainly people do stuff to give their life value or to give themselves value or to have more value, okay? And it's all backwards because we are of extreme value. But this value has nothing to do with what we think it has to do with. It has nothing to do with how famous we are, how popular we are, how much money we make, how much status, power, or anything, you know? And boy, you know, my country goes into your country. Boy, we really can show you guys up, you know? Has nothing to do with that, okay? It has to do with that we are spirit. And our value is that it is by that knowing of ourselves as spirit that we come to completion as souls and fulfill our karmic journeys. And it's also that God lives in us as us, and it's through us that he completes himself. So we've got a real important role to play, see? And the really nice thing from the point of view of the false consciousness is that as long as you feel unworthy, then you don't have to deal with your fear of God. See? Well, I'm unworthy of the guy. Okay? Well, let's just say I'm... Well, Ed's not here, so I can't pick on Ed. But I'll use that example anyway, okay? Let's just assume, okay, that I walk around feeling unworthy of playing for the Knicks, okay? So as a result of that, I never try out for them. I never even practice with them. I never do anything because I don't feel worthy of it, okay? So I never, ever have to deal with the fear that maybe the Knicks won't think I can help their ball club. Maybe the Knicks won't think I could contribute. Maybe the Knicks won't think I'm a good team member. Whatever it is. So as long as I feel unworthy, I don't have to deal with the fear. See? And what human beings walk around with is this tremendous fear of God. Okay? And if you take a look at how we cogitate God, how we think of him, there's this big guy outside of us, you know? And if you take a look through the religions, you get to see how it evolved in the human consciousness, you know? That there's this terrible God that had to be appeased through sacrifice, or through totems, okay? And then it gets a little bit better in that, well, maybe, perhaps, it could be possible that there's somewhat of a sense of justice, you know? But if you look at the Old Testament, you're going to find a God who's pretty horrendous, you know? He's going to strike you dead. Well, but he has to, because he has to be the meanest guy in the valley. Because the God of the Hebrews had to be tougher and meaner than the God of all the tribes that they conquered. And they conquered all these tribes who had these gods. So how can you conquer them unless your God was tougher than their God? Okay? And then you move into, perhaps with some sense of a God of justice and things aren't seemingly random, you move into a consciousness that evolves as in the Christ, where, hey, it's a God of mercy and kindness and a God of love. Now, we still haven't gotten there yet, okay? But it shows that potential. You know, and you can even see it in the Old Testament when this character named Mehizaldek appears. And he appears for a short time. He says, "Hi, folks, I'm the high priest of Salem." And he disappears. That's it. You never see him again. Okay, I'm a priest of the Most High. Well, whoa, okay? This is something really important, what happens, okay? Because up until then, what's been happening is the Abrahamic way, or the karmic way, or the eye for an eye and the tooth for a tooth mentality. Melchizedek comes in and says, "Wait a second now, Mamacita. I'm from the Lord of the Most High." Okay? So that's going to bring in a new energy pattern onto the planet. And Melchizedek is a precursor for the Christ Jesus. Okay? And that's what he's saying. Okay? And then the Christed consciousness, as in Jesus, comes in and it brings forth God of mercy, God of kindness, God of love, someone who cares about us. Okay? See, and it's real interesting because until you get there to the Christ and the embodiment, the very idea of an embodiment of God in the flesh, you have a God who's, yeah, he's created the world, okay, for example, like in the Old Testament, but he's removed from his creation. So you really can't know him, and he's not really present, okay? Christ brings in a whole new way of relating that. Wait a second, God's in us, and he's kind, and he's compassionate, and he cares about us. Okay? Did he give his only begotten son, you know, sacrificed him up? Well, yeah. Okay? But not for what everybody thinks, you know? That idea has been around for a long time, you know? And it's interesting, if you take a look at the burning bush and where Abraham was supposed to kill his son and doesn't quite do it, that's for punitive stuff. You know, that's the old eye for an eye stuff. And if you take a look at it, you can see that dying. And then the Christ Jesus comes along. Okay? And is he born of virgin birth? Yeah, he's born of virgin birth. Does that mean his mama had no sex? Probably not, you know? But it has to do with, and you'll find this in many, many cultures preceding the time of Christ, is giving birth to the consciousness of the at-one-ment with God. And it has to do with the spiritual marriage and the union with God, the soul and the spirit meeting up and bringing forth the Christed child in you. Okay? And it's interesting, you know, the Christ Jesus was born in a manger and they has to go flee for his life. You know? Census is going to come on and bingo, they're going to, you know, let's count the Jews and let's kill them. So he's got to go flee. He's got to go to Egypt. Okay. But the essence and the point of all this is crucial. And that is that, okay, we've evolved from that way of looking at God out of our system, basically. He's created the world, but he's not a part of it. And he's mean, and he's tough, and he's patriarchal. Okay. To, wait a second, he's in the world and he cares about us. Okay? He cares about us. Okay? All right, and then so what do we do as people? We play this game of, it's Jesus, you know, Jesus has it all, you know? And we totally deny what the Christ taught us. And that is that the consciousness that's in him is in us. It was distributed after he left the body. So we have the Christed consciousness in us. See, and so what we've done as people is we've abdicated our responsibility. And it's only Jesus who has this knowledge, or only, you know, these certain whatever wise souls in the world, and it's not our responsibility. Okay? And so much of that is born out of fear. Okay? And this is crucial. We know that the journey of a soul is from fear to love, from fear of God to love of God. Okay? And I don't care what it is you're relating to, whether it's the way you drive your car, whether it's to your boyfriend or girlfriend, whether it's to your spouse, whether it's to your work, whether it's to your job, whether it's to anything, okay? But underneath all our relationships is the one crucial relationship, and that's our relationship with the spirit we are, with God, okay? And, you know, it's interesting, too, because in a lot of the religious communities, they venerate the ones who are most scared of God. Okay, and actually some of, when you translate what they're called into English, that's what it means. It means either the frightened ones or trembling. Trembling before God or so. Okay? And as long as we can work with a God who is not there for us and whom we're afraid of, well then guess what? We're not going to be able to really relate. Okay? But God's inside. Okay? So if God's inside and lives in you as spirit, well that kind of blows the whole thing open. Because then obviously he's involved in his creation. Okay? And obviously he cares about you. And obviously you must be worthy. See, and so much of what we do is out of our basic reflex almost to be afraid of God and to feel totally unworthy. And because we feel unworthy, we don't even get in there and deal with the fear. See? If I think I'm worthy of playing with for the Knicks, okay, well then guess what? Then I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm going to do the tryouts. I'm going to get myself in shape. I'm going to, you know, practice my jump shot. I'm going to be able to dunk with my eyes closed, whatever it takes. And I will deal with it. See, and I will relate to it. But as long as I think I'm unworthy, I won't even relate to it. See? And there's this like patina, as it were, on the human consciousness, this coloring. Okay, and it kind of sits there. And it says, hey, I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. You know? So, okay, well then who's good enough? Well, not really anybody, but, you know, if you believe on Jesus, he's good enough. But I'll tell you what, we'll help you. We'll set up all this clergy stuff and all these rituals, and then you can feel involved or so. Well, is that helpful? I don't know. You know, surely it's got to leave some part of you unsatisfied. You know, and I remember talking to someone who'd been doing Kabbalah, and I don't mean the current fad of Kabbalah studies now, but I mean the way Kabbalah is really to be taught. And I had studied formally for years and years, and he came up to me one day and he said, boy, I think it was, I think they did an 8-year cycle. So this week is my last class in the last cycle. So the teacher is going to tell us exactly the very essence of Kabbalistic thought. He promised us, he said at the end of the class we just had, hey, I'm going to tell you what the Kabbalah really boils down to. Okay, and then I saw him the next week and I asked him, I said, hey, how was your class and what'd you learn about the essence of Kabbalah? And he said, well, you know, I'm so happy because the teacher said, well, you know, maybe perhaps we really could, if we take a blind leap of faith, we really could know God. And I said, wow, how'd you feel when your teacher said that? And he said, oh, I felt great. And I said, well, why would you feel good about that? He said, because, like, there's a chance. Like, there's a chance, you know? I said, like, what kind of a chance? He said, well, the teacher really didn't come out and say it, but it's kind of like maybe 1 in 1,000, you know, maybe 0.1% chance that maybe perhaps I could know God. And that just makes me feel great, you know? And so I looked at him and I said, well, I'm glad you're feeling good, okay? But I really hope that you'll have a much higher percentage down the line pretty soon, you know? And this by the way, this is not to knock Kabbalistic thought. And by the way, it's really just a Neoplatonic thought come into play, but I'm trying to get at prevalent thought forms in our consciousness. Okay, and as long as we walk around with, well, you know, you really can't know God, you can only do it by some leap of faith, you don't have to make much of an effort. Okay, or if I believe that when I drop the body I'm going to suddenly be in heaven, guess what? I'm not going to make any freaking effort to come to know myself as spirit or as God. Okay? And so when I go read what the Christ said, and he said, hey, that which is in me is in you too, only more so. So he's saying, wait a second now. I have more of a Christed consciousness than he did. You know? I would totally ignore what the guy's saying. Because, hey, you know, I can't really come to know God. Or I'm not worthy of it. If I'm not worthy of it, I won't make the effort, okay? But we know that the responsibility that we're charged with is just the opposite. It is to know ourselves as spirit, as soul, okay? And to practice that devotion, all right? And it has to do really with even in our everydayness. Where are we focusing? Where are we placing our thoughts? Where are we placing our attention? What are we running? And can you give up your negativity even if you don't know what's going to take its place and allow the spirit in you to come forth and allow God to do what God does? You know, because God's plan for us is so much better than our plan for ourselves. See, but the thing about God, you know, it's interesting. We put God up there, and when we pass through this life, we'll go meet God. So it's like we relegate this earth to a horrendous experience, and we'll just endure it, you know? Or we're here, or we'll build up points, you know? Let's do a lot of good deeds, and that'll weigh God's, you know, favor on me. You know, and as long as we have that sort of stuff going on, we can't be honest and we can't fulfill our what we're charged with. And we're charged with knowing ourselves as that, as spirit. Okay? And the journey of a soul is from that fear of God into love of him. Okay, and we know in our journey that we're souls, and yeah, it seems that we love him, and there's this, we're the subject, there's this object, God, and then there's the love between us. Okay, and then we come to realize that even that is an illusion, that there's no subject and there's no object and there's no love between us, because they're one and the same. We're one and the same with God. And that's the Christed consciousness. Okay? And because we've forgotten all this, we walk around with just the opposite. We walk around, not that God's in us and lives in us as us, but that we've been kicked out. See? But the truth is, what we've done is we've kicked God out. And so, of course, the way the consciousness works and the mirror effect, it looks like God's kicked us out. Okay, because the way the cosmic mirror sits in the inner worlds is, okay, I've kicked God out. So it gets in the mirror as kicked out. And it's reflected back. So it seems like it's from outside. So yeah, God did it to us. So we take no responsibility. And we take no agency, as it were. We have no agency. And if we have no agency, then guess what? We have no free will. So we're victims of blind fate. Okay? But we know from the teachings of the Path of Soul Transcendence that our life is one of human destiny. Okay? There's a destiny here. And sooner or later, it's got to be fulfilled, because that's the plan. Is it the plan because I say so? No, I'm just like the sideline reporter, you know? I'm just describing what the game is. Okay, not that it's a game, but that's the plan. The plan is, hey, you're here to know yourself as spirit, to experience God, and you're divine. You're divine and you're in this human form. Okay, and the trick is, we know you have to go in and up, as it were, and you start separating out from the world of form, from all the confusion, and you come to know yourself as spirit, as soul. And when you allow the karma to be upon you, you go down and out, as it were, into the false self, out into the world. See, and that's the karma. And then you partake in the world from a place of karma. But we know there's another way. Okay, but you can't do and participate this other way. And this other way is the way of grace. If you think you're not worthy of God, and if you're afraid of Him. See? Because really, in my experience with working with a lot of people, is really the opposite, is that they're really afraid of God's grace and God's mercy, and that they don't want it because it makes a liar out of them. It means that they are worthy and that they're okay. And guess what? If you can withstand the frequency of God, well, hey, that frequency has to be in you. Or you couldn't withstand it, you know? And I told you about going to a funeral, and as they were lowering the casket into the ground, the minister just beat the hell out of the coffin. You know, just pounded on it. Just, wow, the hell was he can, as he could, you know? So I thought, oh, gee, you know? I mean, I thought you couldn't disturb the dead, you know, but this will disturb and cause earthquakes for miles around. But the whole idea was, okay, pound the hell out of the coffin, wake up that thing, whatever you want to call it, that's in the casket, so that when it gets to heaven, it's going to be wide awake. I thought, well, that's really cute. You know, if that person wasn't with God when it was in the body, how's it going to tolerate it? And how's it going to wake up? And if it's the physical body that can get before God, then there must be a lot of blind, lame, and people in wheelchairs sitting on around the throne of God, you know? It's not the body that goes there. It's the soul that does, okay? But the body is a gift, and it's the temple that houses the soul. And we have to use this life in the body appropriately, which is to know ourselves as spirit and to discharge our responsibility. We're responsible. As human beings, we're responsible, okay? We have jobs. We're responsible to show up, okay? We have children. We're responsible. We're custodians for these children. We're responsible to take care of them, to be there for them, to help them grow emotionally, physically, spiritually, mentally. We're responsible. We take that on, okay? But every person has the responsibility of coming to know itself as spirit, as soul, see? And because we've forgotten, mankind walks around furious that it's powerless, that it's a victim, that's been excommunicated, as it were, from heaven. But that's not true. Just the opposite is true, and you are worthy of knowing the truth, and you are worthy of the responsibility, and you are worthy of having God live in you as you. So let me leave you with a question, and that is, if God lives in you as you, well, what's the problem? Okay, we'll stop with that.